Hello, I'm Jane Crowther, editor of Total Film, and welcome to Inside Total Film, the weekly podcast from the Smarter Movie Magazine. And today I'm joined by our contributing editor, Leila Latif.
Hello.
Hello. And one of our contributors, Ashanti Onka.
Hi.
Hello. And so this week we are weighing and measuring Idris Elba's Beast, Regency rom-com Mr. Malcolm's List, and Antonio Banderas' satire Official Competition. But before we get onto those, ladies, what have you been watching this week? Ashanti.
So I have finally gotten myself into the Game of Thrones madness. Mm. I had avoided all 8 seasons of the actual show. And then House of the Dragon kind of hit us. And they had this massive world premiere at Leicester Square. Went to see it on the IMAX screen. This horrific birthing scene that I had to... my God, I had to avert my eyes, you know, but I just really got into it. And I think at Christmas time, I'll go back and then watch all of Game of Thrones, because I feel like it's a series that I can cope with. I think I'm ready now that I've done lots of these podcasts with Jane and watched the films. Jane,
I was going to say, though, like when we first met, you were like, I don't do anything slightly alarming on screen. I think, you know, yes, the Red Wedding's going to be quite alarming for you.
It probably, but I also feel now that I'm quite ready for it.
We've toughened you up.
You've definitely toughened me up. I'm now watching. I mean, I'm saying yes to horror films. When I get invited, I actually go, which is new for me. The fact that I sat through Men and liked it and even wrote about it for you just goes to show that I've elevated my my viewing. Cool. But speaking of, I've got a couple more things to throw to you. Never Have I Ever. I know Jane knows I'm a huge fan.
Yes, you're a nerd.
I am a bit of a Never Have I Ever nerd. Maitreyi Ramakrishnan comes back with season 3, and this is the penultimate season. They will be ending fully on season 4. And this is all about this kind of teenager and her love life. That's what it kind of revolves around. But there's lots of things about, you know, cultural norms and exploring religion, et cetera, et cetera. Mindy Kaling is bringing her A game to this. So I have to say I'm recommending it to everyone. And I just can't wait for season 3 to come. And I think Leila might want to talk about this as well, She-Hulk.
I would say I've also been watching Never Have I Ever, and I do love that show. I love Mindy Kaling, and I think actually the way that it shows grief is really beautifully done in that show. I'm kind of weirdly more into that element than the sort of who does she end up with side, and her like and her sidekick friends are just so wonderful. But yeah, I've been watching She-Hulk, which, you know, I listened to this podcast and everyone very much enjoyed this week, so I'm here to kind of say it's terrible. I've been furiously DMing back with editor-at-large Jamie Graham in disagreement about She-Hulk. I honestly, it feels to me like a show made by someone that had not only didn't really understand the struggles of professional women, but almost had never met a woman.
A woman.
Well, you know, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. I just thought it was completely inept. There's one scene in the first episode where Jameela Jamil bursts through a wall, and then they sort of have a fight, but they don't actually fight. They actually just have some big banging noises in the background. And I just thought, if this is really the level that we've gotten to post WandaVision, where I was, you know, like a kid on Christmas the day when the next WandaVision was going to come out, like, oh, how the mighty have fallen.
So where does it rate in your sort of Marvel shows sort of list? Is it right at the bottom?
Right at the bottom. Which is a shame, because I would say Tatiana Maslany is a fantastic actress.
Yes.
And I was actually quite looking forward to it. But yeah, top tier WandaVision, Loki, I reckon. And then most of them have been solid.
Have you seen the 4 episodes, Leila? Or is it just...
I've seen the 4.
Really?
And I would say Tim Roth is great. Hmm? Give that guy a show. Which is a terrible thing to come away being a female-led project.
I know. Give the guy a show. That's not really what we're aiming for with this, right? No.
Abomination.
It really is, because I mean I loved Ally McBeal, and I love courtroom shows, and I love kind of stuff about, you know, women in the workplace and kind of all the, you know, the crap of dating in the modern age. It should be so good, and that's why it's upsetting. Mm. But I mean, I will keep watching because Sign of a Punishment.
I know. Imagine if Emerald Fennell had got hold of it and done She-Hulk, what we might have ended up with.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I'd go so far as to say it's actually pretty egregious to have this whole thing about women are just always angry on the inside and we're all so angry and we're keeping a lid on our anger and stuff. And I don't know about you, but like, I actually feel as a woman, I'm not that angry. And I often get accused of being angry when I'm not. So I was like, well, this is really buying into something pretty odious, if you ask me.
I don't really like the way she looks when she turns either. I'm not massively fond of the look. I'd like her just to be hulky and not feminized-y hulky. And I don't, there's something about that I don't really like.
Yeah, total film contributor Josh Slater Williams messaged me saying, why does she look like a Republican senator? <It's> a...
You can put that on the poster then. Okay.
I mean,
well, Ashanti, your turn. come on, counsellor.
I was just going to say, well, I mean, I just love the fact it's a comedy. I found a lot of it quite funny. I do feel like, you know, Jessica Gao had pitched this back in the day. So I think going back 10 years to Kevin Feige at Marvel, and she had pitched actually a Black Widow movie set around, you know, school reunion. So this wasn't quite what she was intending, but what I feel is that she has kept the feminine dynamics, which have upset Layla so much. I think she's kept them to 10 years ago and not to what's happening in modern day, which is why, you know, I can understand how many women are wound up the wrong way by this, because the Black Widow movie, you know, it was pushed back, then she held on to this script for a long time, and she had included a lot of She-Hulk in that movie. So now, you know, She-Hulk has come out, she's had a chance to make it, and I guess she didn't quite modernize it in the way she should have. And I feel that maybe once Titania, the character played by Jamila Jamil, comes into force and we see more of, you know, the bad and the good and all of that coming together, I think it'd be funny. But didn't you find the fact that she's talking about the Avengers really funny, Layla? Like, where she's just casually talking about Captain America having sex?
Sure. Maybe I'm too perpetually online. And I know that this is like a me problem, and this is probably why most people like this, but everything about it felt so had gone through 9 cycles of the internet. Even like a lot of the dialogue felt like something that this was something from Reddit that got tweeted, that got shared, that got made into an Instagram post, that went back to Reddit, and it's just so stale to me.
Oh dear. Well, Layla, can we cheer you up with thoughts of the future instead of things you've been watching in the past? Next week, you and I are off to Venice Film Festival.
I'm so jealous. So jealous.
Yeah, we will be drinking our spritzers on the beach, but we will be watching films as well. Tell us, Layla, what you're looking forward to at the film festival next week.
Really, really am looking forward to Banshees of Inisherin, which is the new Martin McDonagh film. He made 3 Billboards, which is not actually a film that I like that much, but I love his plays. I've gone to see The Lieutenant of Inisherin like 4 times. I actually think he's best when he kind of sticks to Ireland. And this is now the kind of In Bruges team, Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson. And the trailer just looks so dark comedy, really, really weird. So very excited for that. And for the new Lars von Trier TV show, which will be, you know, it's a bit of a commitment getting into a screening where you're going to watch six hours or whatever it's going to be, but I'm going to be there.
What about Blonde? You've read the book. Are you looking forward to that? The Joyce Carol Oates adaptation.
Yeah, I love the book. It's a real cement brick of a book. It's like 1,000 pages. You could kind of use it as a weapon. I really, really like the book. I mean, I think there's already some kind of criticisms coming out of like, oh, this isn't going to be very accurate. But the book is really like, this is loosely inspired. You know, it kind of starts with this whole thing about like, we are putting a lot of things together. You know, we're going to talk about one foster home that didn't exist rather than the 7 foster homes that she was actually in, that sort of thing. So it's very kind of, I think it speaks to the tragedy of Marilyn Monroe without being a biopic. And I think that's a lot more interesting. Like, I like Spencer for that same reason.
Yes, I think that's probably what it's going to be akin to. Looking forward to that, all 3 hours of it. I'm also looking forward to Bones and All, the new Guadagnino and Timothy Chalamet matchup after they did Call Me By Your Name together. Kids on the Run as Cannibals. Float your boat?
Yeah, Yeah, definitely. I mean, we had that kind of big time of vampires, and then it was like we had like 5 years where it's all about zombies. So like maybe this is the new cannibal era.
Sexy. This is the cannibal era. Sexy cannibal times.
Inspired by Armie Hammer.
Very well. It's based on a book. To be
it's
fair.
A young adult book. Ashanti, get your mind out of the gutter. Okay, shall we move on then? We will be obviously reporting back on our Venice finds online. So do go to Games Radar to find out what we think. But for now, shall we look at this week and what we can watch in the cinemas? It's time to go on safari with this.
I've never seen anything like this. Multiple attacks without eating its prey. Lions don't do that. At least no lion I've ever seen. Go back to the calls.
Dad, please!
Tell us about Beast. Who's in it? Who's the Beast?
So the Beast is actually this really wild lion. It stars Idris Elba, who is a father of two teenage daughters played by Yenna Halley and Leah Sava Jeffries. I think that's how it's pronounced. And his own daughter, in fact, had gone for the role of the elder daughter and didn't get it.
Oh, dear, that nepotism's not working well, is it? No nepotism babies there.
Yeah, I would say that if that happened to me and my dad then told people that I had failed to get an opportunity even with nepotism, I wouldn't speak to him ever again.
Well, she gave him a cold shoulder for a while, apparently.
Yeah, but then he told everyone. That's the worst part. Sorry, I digress.
It's basically a holiday gone wrong. I mean, it's just nail-bitingly scary. At least I found it very scary from start to end. This is like human horror. It just affected me. I kind of sat at the edge of my seat the whole time. It might have been a really cold screening room also, I'm not sure. But I just sat there like, oh my God, the jitters are here. And it's all about how he's been widowed to the mother of these teenage daughters. And he's a doctor, Idris Elba, Nate Samuels. And they turn up for a vacation. You know, it's all nice and hunky-dory. They land, it all seems kind of Lion King-like. And then they decide, let's go on a safari. And that's when things start to turn. So they see a pride of really nice lions and everything seems okay even at that point. And then poachers come into play and then there's this one wild lion. And I'm part of the London Action Festival and we had a clip where we showed that scene where Idris, you know, the lion first sees him and starts going for him. And then we looked back with two of the sound designers to see how they built that tension with sound. And that was really interesting to me to kind of see the finished product. And what they'd done was they showed us a clip, took all the sound off, and then showed us all the layers they had to put on to make that sound and feel so scary. Because quite often in real life, you walk into some of these places that are supposed to be scary, they don't seem so scary. But once you've added the music, that's when it feels really tense. And in this, you have a lot of that tense music throughout this. You kind of have to sit there and bite your nails and wonder if the family will escape this rabid lion. And that's what it's all about.
So it's basically Jaws on the Serengeti.
Actually, yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. You've nailed it.
Okay. Layla, is it Jaws on the Serengeti? As good as Jaws? Probably not.
As a proud owner of a recent Jaws tattoo that I got when I was feeling impulsive, no, it's not as good as Jaws. Jaws is like one of the best films ever made. I do think that like Ashanti was saying, that there is a lot of like skill that is at play here. They've got some really great sound design, obviously, but then also I really liked how like the lion's approach from the frame was really cool a lot of the time. It's not hard cuts at the time. They kind of stay on it and you see this thing coming from a distance and coming closer and closer and closer.
Lawrence
and closer
of Arabia that style.
Yeah, I mean, again, not as good as Lawrence of Arabia. I guess the thing that like, and whilst I kind of like admired that and I thought that it was like a perfectly fun time, I did think after a while, we kind of lost sight of what a lion is. At the beginning, they kind of come across some lions that are like nice lions and like they're actually running up to them and giving them hugs. And then there's this lion who is been driven mad by grief for the second half of it, there's so many kind of silly plot machinations to kind of keep them, who are people in a safari park in the 22nd century with a car, keep them still like under threat of the lion, that, you know, I think it kind of got a bit silly. Like, I think there wasn't enough reason for them to still be in danger. And I couldn't help but think about Cruel, which is a couple of years ago, that one with the crocodiles that came out. And I thought that was so clever, the way that they just like trap them in there. And like, you know, the father's injured, the rain is coming down, the water levels are rising, you know, and all of that. This, I just kind of couldn't help but feel like, just leave by the time we hit the hour mark. But yeah, sadly, it is really good fun though. And it is, I would say, well-made and very competently suspenseful.
So a sort of good popcorn movie to enjoy without sort of thinking about it too hard afterwards.
Yeah, yes. Definitely.
But also, okay. I mean, you have to be ready for an Uncut Gems type feeling throughout the film. I felt like they kept that edge of the seat quite a lot. And if you're looking for something fun to watch, this is probably not that film. This is not fun at all. It is very scary. It felt like a horror film to me. But on the other hand, yes, I think it's one that you can kind of, you know, probably a date night film if you want your partner to put their arm around you.
Give you a little squeeze. Oh, Shanti, you seductress. Just on that note, Layla, where's your tattoo? Let's see it. Oh.
Oh, whoa. I can't. What? That's amazing.
Oh, okay, let me get closer. It's like a little shark fin above waves. Oh, I see it. Oh, there we are. There we go.
That is very clever.
She has a shark fin above waves on her ribs, ladies and gentlemen, which I imagine probably was quite ouchy.
No, because nowadays they do it with numbing cream. So I just leaned into my impending midlife crisis. Yeah, it was fine. Very nice chap.
You'll be showing that to Steven Spielberg when you next sit down with him then. Wow, hoisting the t-shirt up. Here's my tattoo of your film, mate.
Yeah. Would you please give me that opportunity, Jane? Any commissions for his next project?
I will definitely keep it in mind when we get to the next Spielberg film. We'll send in the girl with the tattoo of one of his movies. You know, it shows devotion. I don't know what I should get a tattoo of in order to make my dreams come true. I'll have a think about it. But Beast is in cinemas from Friday. Maybe you'll get a tattoo after you've seen it. Who knows? Shall we move on then to tracking a different kind of prey with this?
Dearest Selina, will you come visit me in London? I promise you will be well and entertained.
I need your assistance. There is a gentleman, Mr. Malcolm. He humiliated me. No. I then found out he had a list.
You have a list of qualifications for a bride.
I would love for Mr. Malcolm to receive the comeuppance he deserves.
Plus, it could be rather fun.
If we present you as the perfect woman, then he discovers he does not meet the requirements on your list. That would be a perfect sort of poetic justice.
So this is Mr. Malcolm's list. Ladies in Regency England looking for a chap. Layla, how's this different?
So this is based not on a kind of Regency novel, but a kind of more modern novel that's just like set in the era. It's colorblind casting or color conscious casting. I'm not entirely how she likes to define it. So we've got people like Frida Pinto and Sophie Derisu, and amongst Oliver Jackson Cohen, Theo James, people like that. Like a very, very hot cast, I would say. There's a lot of like really talented people that have got a great amount of buzz around them. The story at the center is very kind of classic Regency romance, where you've got a young woman who's from like a slightly lower social standing, but it's still in society. She's like the daughter of a vicar. She's got a friend who's a lot more kind of wealthy and connected than her, who's played by the wonderful Zawe Ashton, and who, congratulations to her, she's marrying
Tom Hiddleston.
Tom Hiddleston, yes.
She is marrying Tom Hiddleston. She's marrying Loki and having Loki's baby.
What a dream couple those two are. But anyway, so she is, she actually gets rejected by Mr. Sophie Derisu, who is the Mr. Malcolm with the titular list, and is so annoyed that she gets her friend of slightly lower social standing, played by Frida Pinto, to come and kind of trick him into falling in love with her. And so he kind of learns how it feels like to be rejected.
Does it work for you?
Just kind of compare it to like a lovely box of chocolates. Like it's a beautiful kind of thing to look at. It just so doesn't break the mold, though. Like, it's really, like, lovely. It kind of sits for a moment and is kind of a little treat. And then I think you just, like, but not much sustenance. I don't think you'll leave it kind of, you know, all the better for having seen it, or it's, like, transformed your impression of the Regency era. But, yeah, I can't really say much against it, but I can't say that much in favour.
Oh, Ashanti, do you feel more warmly about it?
I do. And I guess for those who know me, they'll know exactly why. It's the interracial romance, because there's a black man. He happens to be Yoruba, like my husband, and an Asian woman in Frida Pinto. And I love that, because since Mississippi Masala, which was 3 decades ago, we've not seen such a kind of love match in mainstream, you know, in mainstream movies. And that was wonderful to me that Emma Holly-Jones has gone for this kind of cast and kind of brought this couple together, and also not focus too much on the race issue between them. It's just representation that's shown on screen that, you know, it kind of normalizes a black and Asian couple. It's very difficult to see that on the big screen generally. So for me, that really worked. And as Leila said, the cast is very hot. I think there's lots of very funny moments. I also love the music. I thought that they did a fabulous job, Amelia Warner, again, using these different women. The editor is also a woman in Kate Hickley. And that worked very well for me. The place they shot it in, I believe it was some beautiful vistas in Ireland. That was very, very beautiful. And, you know, Chope Dirisu, he's a British Yoruba guy who is in Gangs of London, and he has a lot of talent. I love how he's rising and picking some fabulous, fabulous things to show his talent. And it's very stylish. It's beautifully made. And Emma Holly-Jones is one to watch, I would say, with this one. Like Leila said, maybe it's not something that'll stay in our psyche forever, but I feel like it's made a big jump and leap in terms of not just color-conscious casting, but showcasing interracial couples, especially the Asian black couple, which had been a taboo and constantly a difficult thing to break through, as I've personally experienced.
I felt a little bit like Mr. Malcolm in this, because I was kind of haughty and bored by it as it started and not very interested. And as it went along, I became more and more enchanted with it. And by the end, I was fully engaged in this couple and hoping that he was going to ride his horse fast to catch her up wherever she may be. I fully sort of had a full falling in love with it. But as you say, it is very lightweight. It's very throwaway. And it's, you know, it's part of the whole Bridgerton stuff as well, isn't it? We have seen this now, and David Copperfield and other projects. So it doesn't feel as sort of fresh as it might once have done. But isn't that kind of nice that it doesn't feel so different anymore, that you just watch something like this and you don't even consider that it's fresh because it's got all of these different people in it. So I thought that was kind of enjoyable. But yeah, I don't think it's going to set the world on fire.
It isn't, yeah. But, you know, watch it for the costumes, watch it for the music, watch it for this beautiful pairing.
I'm so in favour of kind of colourblind casting when it comes to period dramas, because I just feel like we're so used to seeing people who've got very clearly got 21st century dentistry and highlights.
Yes.
And then Zoe Ashton is like the most fantastic Regency bitch in this.
Oh, like, I loved her. She was so good.
So fabulous. Like, just like a really wonderful villain, but then like you're rooting for her at the same time.
Adorable, but awful. Adorably awful.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm sure that's been said about me in the past, but yeah.
You're awfully adorable, Leila. That's what you are.
Too kind.
Okay, so that is Mr. Malcolm's List, and it is out on Friday. Right, you ready for alternative line reading? We're going to do it. It's going to be a quote from somebody who we've already talked about, but obviously not in the correct accent. I'm going to do it as a Regency lady. We're on a planet surrounded by doorways. Go through one.
That was a brilliant accent.
That was very Kate Beckinsale in, was it Love and Marriage? Was it Love and Friendship? That's an underrated film.
Yes, that is an underrated film. That is very good, yes. Yeah, so who said that in what film?
Well, I will always remember this because it was my first ever issue as contributing editor, but that is from Thor Ragnarok, the fabulous Taika Waititi, whose most recent one was a cover of Total Film, that kind of beautiful neon 90s cover that you had.
Yeah, indeed. A special edition all round. Well done, Leila. Round of applause for you.
Hela is ravenous. If I let her leave, she'll consume nine realms and all the cosmos. We need you.
I'm working on it, but I don't even know where the hell I am.
We're in a planet surrounded by doorways. Go through one.
Which one?
The big one.
Okay, let's move on then to another film that's out this week. And it's apt that we'd be talking about this one because it's, you know, a festival type film. It's this.
Action.
Estoy listo.
Félix es, pues, una estrella. Iván es, tiene mucho prestigio. A mí me interesa mucho esa atención.
Buenas noches.
¿Otra vez?
Buenas noches.
¿Una vez más?
Buenas noches.
Ahí está.
Yo también lo he sentido.
This is Official Competition. Ashanti, tell us what it's about and who's in it.
Well, this has the casting coup of the century, I would say. Penelope Cruz, Antonio Banderas, and Oscar Martinez coming together in this comedy. I have to say, from start to finish, it's kind of, apart from a few emotional bits here and there, it will have you in peals of laughter. It's almost like a film in a film, because it's about a woman director who's directing two of the best of breed, and they've literally cast the best of breed. One is a huge kind of Oscar winning kind of international star, and the other one is a star in Spain. And Oscar Martinez and Antonio Banderas just bring their A game to this film. And Penelope Cruz, I mean, well, I don't know about you two, but I absolutely adore this woman and everything she does.
Right? Yeah, me too. And she's got numerous films at Venice this year, so we'll be watching plenty of them.
Oh. Yeah, last year too. Last year she came to Venice with this and Parallel Mothers, and this year she's also doing two at Venice. This woman is unbelievable.
She just churns them out. And, you know, who can wear a frizzy red wig better than that woman? She looked fabulous in it.
I'm with you both, because she not just looks fabulous, and she's always looked fabulous, even in her very earliest work, but it's like she's aging like fine wine. She looks better and better in every film. And with Official Competition, I mean, what can I say? The film is probably, well, it's already hit my kind of top 10 of the year. I mean, have to say that I was completely blown away by this, because it's a very sharp satire in the screenplay, which really worked for me. When Antonio Banderas gives us, you know, different facets of acting, it's like a masterclass for anybody who's into cinema. And that, again, worked for me totally. Everybody else who's in it plays very small roles, because these three are given the center stage, and quite rightly so. Penelope Cruz, she plays Lola in this. And it's how she directs these two men.
So good.
Isn't it about... Oh, it's so good, right? It's like, oh my gosh. Because we've got Felix and Ivan, who are the two guys that she's directing. And she's trying to use different methods to make them better. And a lot of it makes you think about how should you destroy everything so you can create something new? You know, the word pivot that's around all the time. How do you pivot to making the best version of yourself? All of that is in this one fabulous, fabulous film.
Yes. So Layla, what were your thoughts on this? Did you enjoy the sort of inside baseball look at making a film?
I did. And sometimes I do think filmmakers can think that the process of making a film is a lot more interesting than it actually is. Like, we're not short of films about filmmaking out there. So I was a little bit wary coming into this. Obviously, I love Penelope Cruz and, you know, would kind of watch her read the phone book. But I was so pleasantly surprised. I thought this was absolutely hilarious and a really fresh take on it. And everything in it was kind of angles that I hadn't really seen before. Like, I think there's a bit that Ashanti references that's kind of awards are being thrown into, I don't know, some sort of grinding machine, which is just like so like wonderfully cathartic. And it's just so funny. Like, I don't think of Antonio Banderas and Penelope Cruz particularly as like great comedic actors, but it is unbelievably funny from start to finish. Even like the little digs at Oscar Martinez, because, you know, he's still got a tiny bit of his old Argentinian accent. It's so like wonderfully bitchy the whole way through. I actually didn't realize, in my mind, Penelope Cruz and Antonio Banderas have made dozens of films before because they do so much on Moldavar, but they've actually apparently only ever had 2 minutes on screen together. And like, I just hope they do more because they bounce so wonderfully off each other.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. And also I think this is sort of, you know, Antonio Banderas is playing this sort of, you know, playboy movie star who, you know, his colleague thinks isn't a, you know, as good an actor, isn't a proper actor, doesn't teach acting as he does. He likes to bring his A game to the set. He won't cry in a rehearsal or that sort of stuff. And I love the fact that Antonio Banderas is playing with that idea of who he really is. And, you know, you mentioned, Ashanti, this idea of showing how people do different takes of a single line. And he does a lot. He does one point where he has to do where she says to him as director, now, I want you to do this drunk and I want you to do it as a drunk 5. Then I want you to do it as a 6.5. And and the difference that he actually manages to show, the technique he actually manages to show while making it really funny that he is doing it, but actually, you know, showing the work properly is quite the magic trick, I think. And he does that throughout. That I just think he's so clever at being funny and it being big, but at the same time, technically really flipping brilliant. He's so, so good. I love him as Puss, but I think this is an amazing film. And like you, Ashanti, I think it'll probably be on my top 10 at the end of the year.
I didn't think I would laugh out loud. The mark of a good film is one that can get, you know, not only affect me emotionally, but actually make me laugh. And it's very difficult. Lots of people do comedies. There's so many out there. But making us laugh like this, where we've the kind of funny bone in our heads has been touched. And that's what this does. And there's also these moments where, you know, Oscar Martinez, his character is very self-righteous. And he says things like, make sure you don't put me on first class. And that the other guy, Antonio Banderas, he has kind of Man Friday who works for him and says his food needs to be gluten-free.
Yeah.
You know, and you just see these contrasts so sharply. And the way they've brought this together, Gaston Duprat and Mariano Cohn, these two guys together from Argentina, I just love the fact that they brought these brilliant, beautiful vistas. I mean, I want to live in those houses. They just
it's beautifully stunning. Filmed. I mean, even when they're sort of pulling up in the car park of their rehearsal space, it's gorgeous. The lines and the orange of the sports car that comes in and the planes of the building. It's just beautifully filmed as well, everything about it. So it's like, again, it's this showing the work. It's like it is a film and a satire about film, but at the same time, it's a really beautiful, technically brilliant film as well.
Totally.
Yeah. It feels like the obvious choice would have been to have made these people like idiots and like completely incompetent. And I think it's so much more interesting that I never for 1 minute doubt that they're all actually really talented, but they're still ridiculous. And there's still a lot of like fun to be had with that. And, you know, I thought I was seeing a much more kind of serious film than it is. I mean, obviously, this is an impressive bit of cinema, but I didn't realize how fun it was going to be. And I also did not see the final twists coming. Mm-hmm. And I laughed and laughed and laughed right up until the final very dark moments, which I suppose is just my sense of humor. Maybe you weren't so keen, Ashanti, on that.
No. I was just saying, don't say anything that'll spoil it for people, because I feel like this film just gives you a lot of surprises. Like one of you mentioned that you went into it cautiously. So did I. I went into it thinking, I'm not sure. It's a casting coup for sure, but is this film going to work? And then every 15 minutes, they're giving you something that makes you think again. And just wow, what can I say? It really is a brilliant comedy film and everyone must watch it.
I also would love to talk to actors about this. So like have them watch it and then be like, that's surely like so funny because it's so true. And surely you've probably had these kind of interactions. You're like the bit when Banderas is doing warm up before he does his take and the other guy's just like, are you going to do that before every take? And, you know, do you cry using emotions? Do you do a whole backstory for your character or do you just turn up and read what's on the page? On every set, there must be those things happening with people and people, you know, pulling a Laurence Olivier and saying, just try acting, dear boy, and other people like going full method and, you know, like all of this stuff. It's just fascinating to me. And I would love to know what actors think about it and what bits they really recognise.
Yeah, I was thinking about it when I was reading a article about method acting earlier that was an interview with what's he called? Andrew Garfield. And he was talking about method acting and about how, you know, people hide behind method acting as a way to basically just be horrible on sets. But it did kind of occur to me that, like, probably being around a lot of method actors is very funny, because it must be, like, really silly a lot of the time. He was talking about being celibate for 6 months and fasting and starving himself and, like, like, can you imagine just being like the DP, just trying to have a sandwich, and you're just like,
yeah,
faced yeah. with this like starving actor.
Yeah, or you know, the people on set who had to like push Jared Leto around because he would only go in a wheelchair. You'd be just like, this is priceless. Surely you would. And you know, when you do talk to actors, you talk to them, and some of them think about it in very different ways to other people. And you think, God, if I put him in a room with her and with him, I don't think they would have a good dinner party at all. They do not see eye to eye on how this process works. And he's incredibly sensitive and like feels everything so keenly. And that guy really doesn't care and doesn't give a shit. I'd like to have a round table talk on this with a load of actors discussing this and telling us all the spilling the tea on all of their terrible co-stars that have held held things up because they were busy, you know, finding themselves, finding the character, or whatever they were doing.
There was a wonderful actress round table at the end of last year, kind of, the, you know, a lot of the big awards contenders. So there was one point where I think Lady Gaga was talking all about how, like, she basically felt that, like, her soul was possessed by this Gucci woman, and she's spoken only in Italian accent for like a year, and you could just see Kristen Dunst like grimacing like and it made me think, I've thought of that with official competition, that,
yeah, like think about Kirsten and Gaga having to sit down for a cup of tea on a set.
Ooh,
yeah, one just won't stop talking in an Italian accent.
Yeah.
Bless it. I guess both did great performances, but I just think it is very funny.
Yeah. It's very funny. Also, can I give a shout out to Irene Escola, who plays the character of Diana, because she has this epic scene with all three of them. This is where I also love the fact that Penelope Cruz, her character, Lola, is a director who is very, very hands-on, let's say. Mm-hmm. And just the way she created it, because she was creating the soundscape by having Irene's character in the middle, and each of them has to kiss her. And that scene for me was really, really eye-opening, because you forget how much it takes to actually create something like that. And how much, again, going back to sound design, something I keep mentioning, you know, they brought that to life, and there were so many different aspects of, you know, of filmmaking that they kind of showcased all in one script. And I thought, these guys are just super, super, super clever for having written this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, again, shout out to that wig, cracking wig.
Yes.
And
truly really proof that she can wear anything.
She literally can wear anything. She wore some interesting outfits, and every single one of them was like, yeah, I could happily try that on because it looks great on you. Looked terrible on anyone else, but she looked fantastic in it. I love Penelope. Can't wait to see her next films. So I think we're highly recommending Official Competition to people.
Highly
recommending. Okay, that is our Palme d'Or winner, Official Competition, in cinemas on Friday. There is The Invitation that's out as well, but we can't talk about that, can we, ladies? Because apparently it is not being shown to critics. What does that usually denote, Naila?
It normally means that they know that we're only going to tear it apart unanimously if they show it to anyone. So yeah, very, very bad sign. Which is a shame, because I think Natalie Emmanuel is wonderful.
Yes, exactly. It looks really good, though. The trailer looked good to me, and I was excited about it, but
it's not to be. It's not to be. Hopefully we'll be pleasantly surprised, and it's just that they wanted to keep that absolute genius, that jewel of a film, sacrosanct for audiences. That's what it is.
I don't know that that's ever happened before, but I, you know, optimism.
You know. Yeah. You know, maybe that's what Denis Villeneuve wanted to do with all his films, just never show them to a critic, or, you know, just because they're so perfect, they don't need it. But it doesn't seem to happen that way. Take from that what you will. Okay, so film of the week, Layla.
Oh, God, Official Competition. Nothing close. I think this is like a really special film. Like you, it's going to be in consideration, certainly, at top 10 at the end of the year, because it's just so nice to have so much fun with something that is also so like high quality in so many different aspects.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ashanti?
Same, absolutely. I have to go for official competition. I feel like everything about it, as Leda said, those high quality aspects, the cinematography, the music, everything just came together. And the, you know, to have a script like this, one of the cleverest scripts I've seen in a long, long, long time, certainly my film of the week, possibly the year, let's see.
Oh, high talk. Yes, same for me. Official competition, absolutely far and away the winner this week. An absolute treat. In fact, I might watch it again. And
I might watch it again, yeah.
Yeah. Or possibly a couple of times. I feel like it's one I want to take my friends to and say, you have to see this. It's really good. It's really entertaining. And it might explain some of the stupid stuff I observe on set when I go on set. So that's all we have time for. Leila and I will be in Venice, bobbing around on boats next week and the week after. But the boys will be here to talk about films next week and the week after. But before we go, there is time for a listener's question. And it's one that I picked because it's apt. What's the greatest movie set in Venice? Leila.
I got a very boring answer, but a very good reason for it.
Go for
Don't
it.
Look Now, obviously. It's Don't Look Now. I love horror films. I love a wonderful sex scene. I love kind of a great twist at the end. And I also think it's an incredibly beautifully shot a film that really captures how magical it feels when you are in Venice. Like there's nowhere quite like it, being on a proper city on the sea. But particularly special for me is I'm very much like my father in that we kind of just go with a lot of kind of random stuff that happens to us. So my dad went on holiday in the early 70s in Venice, and he was in a clothing shop trying to buy something, and in walks Mr. Donald Sutherland, and they start chatting and they became holiday mates. And my dad was there for a couple of weeks while they were shooting Don't Look Now, being invited to set, going out to dinner with Donald Sutherland. Yeah, no, they became friends for a while. This was the 70s, so they didn't stay in touch after this. But like, weirdly, my dad had this kind of
holiday romance,
like a bromance in Venice with Donald Sutherland whilst Don't Look Now is being made. So I get the added layer about like, oh, that's also that cool thing that happened to dad.
Well, does he remember any particular scenes he was on set for?
I don't think he did. I mean, I hope he wasn't there for the sex scene, because that would be a very awkward.
No, that would be a closed set, I would hope.
Yeah, when I ask him next. But yeah, I think he was more there on kind of like the off days and kind of meeting up for a little aperitivo and a Negroni at the end of it, and then going out for dinner and stuff. I think there was less international travel that day, so I think probably for Donald Sutherland, find someone that he wasn't working with all day that spoke English.
Yes.
Was probably a perk. And my dad's also really cool.
And your dad's also really cool. There you go.
Yeah.
Ashanti, beat that one.
I think Jane probably knows. I was going to go for something. Maybe the listeners will consider this pedestrian, but Spider-Man Far From Home. I mean, if I was in school and I was given an opportunity to go and vacay in Europe and also get to go to Venice, I mean, that would have been a dream for me. So I have to pick that. Everyone knows I'm a bit of a crazy Marvel person. Also, I think Donald Sutherland, is it me or does he do a lot of stuff in Venice? Has he like done a lot of films there?
I'm not sure, but there is certainly a film that you can tell when somebody's going for the holiday destination. Certainly the new George Clooney and Julia Roberts does seem to be that. But yeah, you can't blame someone for trying to. I mean, that's what I've done. I've just gotten myself a gig in Venice.
I mean, The Tourist is purely because Angie and Johnny fancied spending weeks in Venezia, surely, because there's no other reason to have made that film.
It's so true, because I was drooling at all the bits around the film, but didn't like the film at all. So yes, agreed.
Dreadful. My Venice film would be, it's not a strictly Venice film, but obviously it has key end moments in it, is Casino Royale and the plight of Bond as he loses Vesper. Certainly the best that Daniel Craig has done. And she is my best Bond girl. And I just think the amazing choice that they made with that character just makes her the very best. Obviously, not to give any spoilers away if you haven't seen it, but it does involve a Venetian palazzo, and it does involve Bond sailing his boat down the Grand Canal, which I'm not even sure you're allowed to do or can do, but who knows? It looks great. And he wears a great sweater whilst he's doing it. Do love a man in a cable knit sweater.
Agreed. It's true. That was a beauty.
Well, Layla and I are off to Venice Film Festival and we will be taking a break from the pod next week. But the boys will be back on the 3rd of September to be telling you all about what you can watch at the cinemas then. Join them. But for now, we say goodbye. Say goodbye, ladies.
Bye.
Arrivederci.
Dimmi quando tu verrai. Dimmi quando l'anno, il giorno e l'ora in cui forse tu mi bacerai. Ogni istante attenderà fino a quando d'improvviso.